WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the holiday season. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll be letting myself play at Costas for my 30th anniversary next Wednesday at lunchtime. Come on by, say hello, have some Crab Imperial. It is all presented by the Maryland Lottery. This guy covered the Maryland Terrapins longer, deeper, and better than just about anybody. And on the back end of seeing all those gold Len Bias jerseys last week down in College Park, I think of the left-hander, and I know they're celebrating Lefty Drizel later on this month. I see a bunch of that stuff. Tom McMillan's coming on the show. But then Mark Turgeon gets fired literally in the middle of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I was at Pappas last week with Mike Bordick, and the WNST text brought to you by Coons Ford comes off. Mark Turgeon's gone. It took me a couple of days of Ravens and Steelers in Pittsburgh to sort of get to it. But Don Marcus covered the Terps longer and better than anybody, and I figured it's going to take me a few days to sort of marinate on this. Don is in semi-retirement doing Len Bias retrospective pieces and hanging out down in Florida, sunning himself as he should be after all these years. How the heck are you? I don't run into you anymore, dude. I miss you.
No, you don't. I stay away. Everything's good. Everything is good. I say that I'm semi-retired, but semi's getting its ass kicked by retired.
Well, I mean, you better probably still get a good jump shot, right? Or you go over to Bicota and crush it, right?
Well, no, but I played there one time just to write a story. And the game, it was the senior game, and it was so slow compared to the senior game I was playing in, because they played, I think they played 5-on-5 half court. And it was, I said, it was like being on 83 at rush hour. You couldn't drive any lane. So, and my game, the game I played, I play with guys your age too. But younger, but
I'm 53 now. So like, it's
I call it my younger game, where the average age is about 40. And I just turned 68 earlier this year, I did a story on it. I tried to be as nice as I could, 'cause they were nice fellas to let me play. But between the distance, because I live down Montgomery County, and the fact that the game was quite slow, I never returned.
Well, you're down in semi-retirement, and we're going to get to your Len Bias stuff. And I certainly love talking Len Bias anytime. I want one of those spiffy gold jerseys as well. The Turgeon thing, I've talked about this a very, very little bit, right, Don? I pick what I talk about in topics. I do a lot of politics. I had baseball last week. Baseball labor's going on. I'm in the middle of Ravens, Browns, Steelers, Browns, Packers, playoffs, Lamar, the slump, all of this. I don't know where the oxygen is for Maryland. You covered it, right? End of football season, another Big Ten thing where they're not really in the category of the elite teams there. But as a basketball school that generates all the revenue and the hope for revenue, despite how good their soccer team is or lacrosse or anything else, the basketball team's the big banana. Turgeon was never all that popular, right? And in my world, where there's always sort of angry, perpetually angry Maryland fans dating back 30 years, everybody was always on his ass. And now you got him, okay? So he's gone now. But I don't understand most of this, and I'm so far outside of it that I really am reaching to you to try to, for me, as just Nestor, the fan guy that's loved the team for 30, 40 years, I don't really understand what's going on there. So I really start from the beginning to have somebody like you explain it to me.
Yeah, I've honestly never seen a situation unfold quite like this either, in the sense that it was really sort of, I mean, it's been brewing for several years. And, it was almost like Maryland fans were waiting for the opportunity to get their chance when the program they saw was at whatever its lowest point has been, they got into the tournament last year, but last year was aberration all regard, because they really didn't play a true road game the whole season. And I don't think if under in the real in, if there had been a real season, I don't think they would have been an NCAA tournament team because that team was just not that good. Played hard, played good defense, but really limited in many ways. You go back to before the pandemic started in 2020, they earn a share of the Big Ten, and even that. And I think for good reason, they had a three-game lead. Maryland had a three-game lead with five games to play, and they sort of backed in the last day by beating a rebuilding Michigan team, a team that was not quite what it's become under Juwan Howard, and then they had this massive celebration as if they had just won the NCAA title with the confetti coming down. I was watching on TV in my house, thinking, this is a little over the top. And when Wisconsin, won its share of title, and Michigan State, they sort of shook hands and walked off the court and celebrated a little bit. Maryland, had this big ceremony, and Turgeon said it was getting Gorilla off his back. And just that admission itself was interesting. And then you go back to the years where they, fell short in the NCAA tournament, lost in the first round to Xavier, lost a couple of times the Big Ten, in the Big Ten tournament as a really high seed. So there's been a lot of anti-Turgeon sentiment building for years. And I've said this, I don't think he was a terrible coach, as I thought Bob Wade was during his 3 years, as I call it, the Bob Wade era at Maryland. But, he certainly didn't answer the bell. They didn't answer the bell, not just in March, but if you look back, their record from the middle of February through the end of the season for all the years in the Big Ten wasn't that stellar.
Don Marcus is here, speaking truths about all things Terrapins and Turgeon, and where does money play into all this? And donors turning on him. Were the donors ever really on his side? I mean, I guess, look, they're fronting money to Puerto Rico. I have friends, dear friends of mine that are always courtside, that spend a lot of money, that travel around, they take it very seriously. I don't know at what point after Gary, and I think that, Gary clearly set a standard of a kind, and you spent a lot of time with Gary. I spent enough time with Gary to see the irascible and, never sort of satisfied, never sort of happy. Gary, when I think back of all the winning he did and the success that he had, I don't remember him being very happy. Turgeon always had, there was always this darkness about all of it. And I like the Turgeonites, and I guess some people embraced it or whatnot. But the hardest part, I think, for the fan base, and especially guys closer to your age than my age, right, and would be leaving the ACC, the Big Ten. You can't not put that in this box of what he inherited in the way it went, and also the really good team he had, the Diamond Stone, Suleiman, the team where he could have made a run, and we could be talking about that one Final Four he went to or whatever that isn't there. But you're the best historian there is, in whether it's Len Bias from 40 years ago or taking 25 or 30 years of Gary Williams and why his name's on the floor. I don't know what to make of this Turgeon era, but when I think back, I would think that the fans were never really with him, and in the end they got him. And that's sort of the weird part for me, is how the donors sort of run this thing. And in the aftermath of Gary said, I don't want to cheat. I don't want to have to pay players. Like, that was sort of the Gary thing, to leave it. And I don't know where the state of college basketball is as far as cheating and paying, especially now when it's sort of all out in the open, right?
Well, that's a lot to digest right there.
It is.
Let me start with the boosters. They have a group of boosters called the Sweet 16 who donate. It's not a ton, it's not a ton of money in the scheme of boosterism. It's $50,000 a year, okay? To I believe it's $25,000 or $50,000 a year to belong to the Sweet 16. And there's a solid group of, I don't know how many, a couple hundred people, maybe. I don't know what the number is. And the number has certainly dwindled over the years. But the boosters it wasn't the boosters here. Definitely not the boosters. And, everything I hear, it was Turgeon basically saying, I've lost this team. He knows he lost the fan base, and he's been aware for years, even though he would never admit that he would sort of be tone deaf to the fan base, which also sort of did not help his cause, because there were times where in other years where they were getting booed. And I remember Roman Stubbs from the Washington Post asking about it one day, and he just said, oh, I didn't hear the fans. You know, I didn't hear that. And of course he did. Rather than saying, I can understand why they're upset. That's why Maryland basketball, there's this passion about Maryland basketball. But with Maryland basketball fans, it's the demographics of Maryland basketball fans and the way, you know, just the whole landscape of college basketball and fandom has changed from when Gary retired in 2011 to now in 10 years, you know, with the explosion of social media, with the, you know, and social media played into it because there were people into this decision, because there were people who were, you know, putting stuff out there. And then Will Turchin, who's a great kid, you know, sort of defended his dad, and not in a bad way. And then they would get on Will Turchin for his dad being a lousy coach.
These jobs are really tough. Any of them. I mean, pick any of these SEC football, any of these places where you're the meal ticket and you have to win.
Right.
It's becoming a really untenable for two guys who've covered coaches and like coaches the last 40 years of my life to see it feel this disposable. I mean, I get that it's a business and you got to win and like all of that, but the heat on Turchin, I feel relieved for him and relieved for the program, but I feel God bless the next guy. Right. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Right. Well, first of all, you can't feel sorry for a guy making $3.3 million a year. Okay. Let's start right there. Okay. I felt more, you know, for his family than I did personally, than I did for Mark. I like Mark. But I was in that camp that really thought, you know, that he was there for 10 years, made one Sweet 16, did not have a very stellar record in March in big games, especially against. He had a decent record as a lower ranked team, but he never, you know, when you were the favorite as a ranked team, he did not have a great record against other ranked teams or getting upset by, you know, other teams that were not ranked. So there was a lot there to say, okay, this guy is going to take. I said to somebody, if you're a Maryland fan and you want to go, you want a coach to take you to the tournament, but only get to the second weekend very occasionally, and don't forget about the Final Eight, forget about the Final Four. That wasn't going to happen. Honestly, you know, he's been coaching for 20 something years. He's only been to two Sweet 16s, but he can get teams to the tournament, and he's a good coach in terms of, He works hard at his job. He knows the game. I think he's good. You know, he cares about his players. He graduates his players. His players don't get in trouble. But in terms of how things are judged now, that I think that, you know, it didn't happen. And listen, it's interesting that, you know, the great comparison is to Gary. You know, Gary, his first 10, and Gary inherited a different, tougher situation.
No lights, no camera, plenty of action.
But honestly, he had better players to when he got there to coach. He had Walt Williams. He had Tony Massenburg. He had Cedric Lewis, who was a good shot blocker. He had some really good players who were still in that program when Wade left. And I'm trying to think if he had, I think he had Mustaf for 1 year, and you know, so he had better players right away. And then when the probation hit, he had to pull Maryland from the depths, and he did an unbelievable job. But there was a point in time where there were people who said about Gary, he's never going to get past the Sweet 16. The difference is he went to several Sweet 16s before he finally, you know, broke through, you know, many years in a row, whereas Turchin has been there only once with a team that beat two double digits, you know, seeds, and then got smacked around by Kansas in Louisville.
Don Marcus is here. We got to talk about his Len buys, and maybe this is a good sort of segue to some of that. Because you mentioned that glory, I was going to say Cedric Lewis, Derek Lewis, those guys. Who was the big Brian Williams was around here for 5 minutes, but that was Wade era, right?
Right.
But going back to that era, and I'm thinking where I was at, like Sports First and the News American going to the Sun. You and Bill Free and Molly Dunham were kind of, you know, banging around the Terps and the Wade thing and the bias thing and all that happened. There was all of the when are they going to recruit Baltimore? Wingate, Ross, Muggsy goes to Wake Forest. Then Dingle and Bright and Sam Cassell goes down to Florida State. And when are they going to keep the local kids? And there was Keith Booth, right, famously. And now in this era, my guy Bino, who I coached Pop Warner Little League basketball over and over a million years, gold ring a million years ago, who's now at DePaul, which I had to Google all that. I don't even know what happened there for him to disappear.
I'll tell you the quick thing with you know, I think that just the fact that Bino left to go to DePaul, obviously he's making more money. And the other guy who had just come in, DeAndre Haynes, went to Marquette with, and he's from the Midwest. But I think these guys got an inkling. Especially when we can get to Baltimore in a second, but with Turgeon, when they redid Turgeon's contract last year, it brought me back to when Kevin Anderson and Damon Evans was there. He was his number two guy when it happened. He did Randy Etzel's contract, redid his contract, and I said that. I thought that was an indication that they were setting up to make it more favorable for them to get rid of him. And when they did that, I wrote a story the day they announced it. Kevin Anderson was on his 60th birthday safari in Africa. So he left it to Damon Evans to do all his dirty work. And so the day they announced it, I wrote a quick story for the internet for the Sun. And Damon calls me back and he says, "Don, can you do me a favor? Can you get that buyout up higher in your story?" And I said, "Oh, so you are going to fire him?" And he laughed. And sure enough, a few months later, he was gone in the middle of the season. Now, here you go, Turgeon, where they had the buyout, where if they fired him before May 5th, 2022, they would only have to pay him X amount of dollars and they can do it over 5 years. And I knew, but if he won, he could get extended. And you thought, okay, he has a chance. They were picked top 25 to start the season. At one point before Wiggins left, in some of these early type of polls, they were picked as high as 5. And I'm going, wow, these guys who are coming in really must be good because they're coming to a team that barely squeaked into the tournament. Well, as it turned out, Wiggins leaves. He's actually, you know, playing some for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And these guys who came in aren't as good as, or they don't fit as well in Turgeon's system as we thought. So that really explains how this whole thing was set up by that contract. But in the end, it was, I think he would have been gone after the season. If they not only didn't make a run, but I think if they, you know, to turn it around early, but I think if they had even gotten to the tournament and lost in the first round, I think they might've fired him anyway.
Don, the Baltimore part of this can't be understated. I mean, I remember Bino throwing me a text saying, "You got to get over to the Mount St. Joe gym. We're going to sign a kid. It's going to be a big deal. His name's Marcel." And the Baltimore side of this, and every time I talk to people about it, they say, "You have to recruit here. You have to recruit here. You have to recruit here." And then I think about the 1 year that Turgeon came close to winning. He goes out to Wisconsin and rents a kid and grabs a kid from Duke that Krzyzewski didn't want. And I, you know, I'm always scratching my head when Krzyzewski doesn't want you know, and that's probably the old school in me. These guys transfer much like these coaches take the next gig, right? So you say Maryland protected themselves to not be stuck on the hook for Turgeon, who's the highest paid person in the state, employee of the state, right? At $3.5 million, that they wouldn't want to waste money politically or otherwise. Right. But there is the who comes next and what does the next guy get and what does he inherit and what's the Big Ten look like? And because that's the story now, right? The story now is Danny Manning. They're going to flop around. They're not going to be very good. They weren't going to be, to everybody's admission, they weren't going to be very good anyway. They were going to go in this new direction. So what do they do? And I go back to the boosters and say, not just to the boosters, to the fan base, to everybody I know who's not a booster or a fan base person, just a person on the internet who likes Maryland with a hat on, that what's going to change about the next hire and what kind of person they're going to hire. I hope it's not like Rick Pitino, you know what I mean?
No, I don't think they're going to go that direction. The issue here, and I've been in advance of coming on this show, I was listening to a couple of things and I was reading up, and you know, the fact that it happened, you know, Gary's retirement happened really, really late. And the way Kevin Anderson did the search, he thought he had Sean Miller, and then Sean Miller turned him down. And
that's
may
right.
Or may
thank
not,
you. I had totally may, forgotten may, about that. Thank
may
you.
Or may not have used Maryland to get more money, which was the rumor at the time out at Arizona. They're not going to go after him. He's tainted. Patino's tainted. There are a lot of good tainted coaches out there. Even Bruce Pearl, I think, is a bit tainted. From what I'm hearing is that they've already heard from, you know, representatives from of some fairly established coaches. I'm not sure, you know, who exactly that is, but you know, there are some really good coaches out there. Maryland is a really good job. They have a beautiful arena. They have a passionate fan base, and they have whoever they bring in. I think, unless it's another Randy Edsall kind of hire, which I don't think this will be, I think will be embraced really well. But, you know, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, Archie Miller, when he went into Indiana with a great reputation at Dayton to replace Tom Crean, who did a good job, but his results were pretty all over the place. They were usually either really good or really bad. They never made the tournament, and then they end up firing him and going out of the box completely and hiring Mike Woodson last summer. So this is a very important hire for Damon. This is a very important hire from Maryland. I mean, the guy who's not getting a lot of buzz, who I think might be a great fit, checks a lot of boxes, is Andy Enfield. Talk about Baltimore. He played at Hopkins. He got his graduate degree in I don't know, he was an economics major. I don't know what he got his grad degree from the University of Maryland. I can remember going first time I met Andy Enfield was probably in 19, and I'll tell you when it was. It was in 1997, in the spring of 70, when Keith Booth, you talked about Keith before, was coming out. He was going to be a first round pick for the Chicago Bulls, and Andy Enfield was trying to teach him how to shoot three pointers from NBA distance, and it didn't go well. And as it turned out, that was Keith's downfall. He was a terrific, hard nosed, tough, inside, undersized college player, but in the pro game, it just didn't work. And you know, he did win a ring he was part of the Last Dance. He did win a ring with the Bulls. But Andy Enfield has had an interesting career. He had all that excitement a few years ago Florida Gulf Coast, when they made the run to the Sweet 16, beat a bunch as an 11 seed, I think. Or no, 15 seed. They won.
Yeah, they were lower.
15 seed. You know, they beat somebody who was a 2 seed, Georgetown maybe, and then kept winning. You know, won another game, got to the Sweet 16.
Well, they won the Cinderella. They were the biggest story on television. That
right,
night,
right, right. And then he goes to USC. Been a little up and down, but last year. With Evan Mobley, I think the kid's name is, who's now in the NBA. They get to the Elite Eight a 6 or 7 seed and beat a couple of really good teams. And now they're having a great year starting out, even though they lost Mobley. I think his brother's still on the team. And I think the dad is one of his assistant coaches, and he's going to be, I think if they keep winning, He's going to be a name of somebody who's out there. There's an interesting connection. One of the guys he coached with, one of his assistants at Florida Gulf State, is Kevin Norris, who's from Baltimore, who actually tried a couple of times to get an assistant job at Maryland and was not hired by Turgeon. I don't know if he was interviewed or whatever else. He's down at University of Central Florida with Johnny Dawkins. You know, so that's somebody that I would, if I'm Maryland, I would at least try to talk to see. Now, the problem here is the more the big names come out, the more, and he's only making like $1.4 million a year at USC, which is a football school. And they just hired Lincoln Riley. So, you know, I think as the names start coming out and things start getting serious, and we have 3 or 4 months of this, you're going to see schools trying to lock people in with high buyouts. So that's why NATO.
So from a strategy standpoint for Damon and for what happened here, this isn't the worst way to bake the cake, have Turgeon run away before Christmas, you know, sort of slog through this purgatory of Danny Manning and we'll see how it goes or whatever. Right. And this is good business for Maryland, the drum up business, right?
Well, it is, but it's going to be a long slog. I think they would have preferred if it was a shorter slog, like a month. Like if Turgeon said,
they probably need something messy and loud. It probably gives the program more interest than just slogging through and beating up Turgeon after they lose every night out in Iowa in the middle of the winter, right?
Yeah.
There's a different conversation going on now, right?
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah. And
it's more like when a team's looking at a draft pick in the NFL, you know,
right.
You're looking at the games differently.
Yeah. And eventually, you know, it really will depend. You know, I mean, it may affect the interest coaches have in the job if they say, hey, wait a second, do I want to go where I have, you know, and the thing about Andy Enfield, one more thing about Andy Enfield, right now, I was looking at the recruiting rankings. Right now, he has the number 5 class in the country for next year. So, you know, there are other names. You know, I know Kevin Willard at Seton Hall's name has come up, Ed Cooley at Providence has come up. You know, there's interest in, I mean, there was, I think, a little buzz for Kim English, Baltimore guy, when they beat, you know, when George Mason, which is really when all this thing started, the most recent thing with Turgeon started. But I think they've come back down to earth. They've had some injuries. I talked to Dwayne Simpkins the other night. They're playing without their point guard. So they haven't won since they beat Maryland. I think they've lost 3 or 4 in a row or 5 in a row. So it'll be interesting, but it's a, you know, you talk about a long season. It's going to be a long season trying to get to the finish line and seeing who's being mentioned now. And then who's really in the discussion, you know, come March, whatever the end of the season is. And they try to be the first one out of the gate, hiring whoever they can and that's the thing. If the coaches they want to get, we'll all have, you know, should all have teams in the tournament to, you know, and so they're going to have to wait for those teams to lose before they can really lock them down. So it's going to be interesting along. And the one thing I'm very happy about, coaching searches were probably the bane of my existence covering Maryland. And aside from
you didn't have to do a lot of them on the football side, you had a handful.
Well, you know, I didn't have to do a lot of them. Yeah. Football, but they are, you know, like one coaching search is like 3 years of work, you know. So if I did 7 coaching searches in Maryland, that adds another 21 years onto the 35 I already spent.
Oh, come on. This is how you become so storied and legendary as to do a Len Bias retrospective. You have to – it's like all this gray hair coming in on my chin, Don. I'm telling you, it's wisdom. It's just – it's wisdom from life's highway. Don Marcus is here, formerly of the Baltimore Sun, I guess always of the Baltimore Sun, probably still contributing here in the aftermath of Purge the Turge and all of that. But you've done this Bias thing. Let's talk about Len a little bit. bit. And, you know, and again, we go back to local, Hyattsville, recruiting the Beltway, and not just the Baltimore Beltway, the DMV, and getting local kids to come and play for Lefty. And you were there for all this. And by the way, I'd be remiss. I want to take just 1 second here and give a little love to Fraser Smith, who we lost since the last time I think you and I got together. Love Fraser, was always intimidated by him. I bothered guys like you around the newsroom. I used to leave Fraser alone. He was like a real journalist back then when I was 17 years old. And we lost him. But I think about this Len Bias story. The Len Bias story is eternal here, isn't it? In so many ways, almost like a fable, right? Like say, well, like a tragedy, right? Literally.
Yeah. No, one of the people we talked to was Len Elmore. Well, one of about 60 to 75 people Dave Ungrady and I talked to for this podcast, which, by the way, is out. The first episode just came out. It's called Len Bias, A Mixed Legacy. You can find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And so the introductory episode called Who Was Len Bias is out now. And I think it's going to be pretty good. So Len Elmore said it was just as you said. He said it was a Greek tragedy. And I was not up on my Greek mythology. He compared it to Icarus getting the wings burned, getting too close to the sun. And John Sally, who we spoke to at length for the podcast, who was really, I didn't realize how close they were, both prior to going to college. They were buddies at Five Star Camp. And he said one of the reasons he'd ever touched drugs was because of what happened to Bias. The story with Bias is interesting because it really is somebody who became much larger and much really more influential in death than he was in life. You know, in life, he was a two-time ACC Player of the Year, Maryland's all-time leading scorer when he graduated, number two pick of the Boston Celtics. That's what he was, and led Maryland to, when he was a sophomore, led Maryland to the, you know, Lefty's only ACC tournament title in Greensboro. In death, he impacted mandatory minimum drug sentencing because the politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, used Bias's death to try to get this, what became this draconian 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act in place that skewed all these penalties against primarily against young black males, where there was a difference between using crack cocaine, which Lenny didn't use, and powder cocaine, which he died from. But it was, you know, powder cocaine was a popular, very cool thing to do in the 80s among a lot of people, a lot of white people. Crack cocaine became sort of it just destroyed black communities in LA, all over the country. So that's one part where Bias, a few years ago, I was doing a story when I called it my exile on Calvert Street, when I was a cops and courts reporter in Howard County, which I referred to as the JV crime beat. And I did a story on illegal SWAT team raids. There was an illegal SWAT team raid in Ellicott City, out near Route 1 and Laurel. And the guy from Eastern Kentucky University said to me, this all started with Len Bias. You know, I told him what I used to do in my former life as a sports writer covering Maryland. And he said, well, this is where it started. How Reagan's war on drugs, the poster child for that war on drugs was Len Bias. You know, they called all these states adopted laws, which were referred to as the Len Bias laws. So that's one part. Culture, how it affected culture. You know, you saw all these people wearing these jerseys the other night. But you go to a Maryland game, or you go to even, you know, a Boston Celtics game, and you see people wearing Bias jerseys. Rappers, I found this great rap video from 2013 from a guy named MC Longshot, who I tracked down and said we could, you know, he was honored that we were using his rap video as the soundtrack for this podcast. And it told an unbelievable, it really sort of laid out Len's story. you know, the best that never was. I think that's sort of the theme to it, you know. And, you know, he impacted so many. And look at what happened in Maryland, you know, with Lefty losing his job, Dick Dull resigning, John Slaughter leaving, Bobby Ross leaving, you know, Bob Wade being hired, and then, you know, all that stuff.
Not to mention what his mother and, you know, and then his brother.
Right.
Legacy still 35 years later.
It's right. Amazing. And then, you know, with the biases losing Jay, who I didn't realize until I read the episode that Dave Ungrady wrote, because he had done a chapter on it in his book about how really good a player and potential Jay Bias was, you know, as a college player. So there's so many, you know, things that people still talk about, and the whole thing about kids, Dave Dickerson said it's the most important, it's a story that needs to be told to teams and youths every year, even if they don't know who Bias is, because it talks about, you know, kids making good decisions. So, you know, it's an unbelievable story. And I think that, you know, we've gone much deeper. You know, there have been other things, the 30 for 30. There was another podcast earlier this summer. But we've gone much deeper into the story. And I think it really will explain why we're still talking, I mean, about Bias 35 years later. You know, summer of 2020, when ESPN was showing The Last Dance, in the middle of that, they had a 3-hour tribute remembering Len Bias on June 19th. And like, why would ESPN, in the middle of a Jordan, you know, Jordan's Last Dance? And the reason is because he was that great a player. He was that big a story, not only when he died, but long after he died. And there's the, you know, the big what if he had lived, would he have been, you know, the rival to Michael Jordan? So there's so many parts of it. And that's why we're still talking about it. And I go back, I mean, I've been watching tape, you know, as they've, you know, a couple people, you know, people doing specials about him being in the College Hall of Fame. When you look back, I forget, you know, it's 35 years ago. I've seen a lot of great basketball players since. And he was, at the time I covered him, I had covered Chris Mullin on a beat in New York, St. John's. I had been around Patrick Ewing. I had even, my first Final Four was Michael Jordan's jump shot to help beat North Carolina in the Superdome.
New Orleans, yeah, sure.
In New Orleans. And I had spent time with Michael in college because I had a good relationship with Dean Smith. So I covered all these guys. And when I showed up at Maryland in 1985, I sort of heard of Len Bias. Covering the Big East, you really didn't follow necessarily ACC until the NCAA tournament. Maryland didn't do that much. They went to the Sweet 16 a couple of times with him. But when I covered him and said, holy, you know what? This kid is the best offensive college basketball player I had ever seen. He was like a bigger version of David Thompson to me, you know, because he had a beautiful jump shot. He was 3 feet off the floor when he took it. He was known as a two-handed dunker, and when he went off on those 2 feet,
he had strength. He was, you know what I mean. Like, you know, he could have played in the Big East, no problem.
He would have been a star anywhere, and he would have been a huge star in the NBA. Would he have been as good as Michael Jordan? That's a big argument to make because of what Jordan became. But when he came out of college, he was he was Jordan with a jump shot.
Hey, how about this? You say power forward, right? He put the power in a power forward, right?
Well, he could
play three positions though, right?
Yeah, on that Celtic team, he would have been, and he probably, I'm talking to guys like Bob Ryan from the Boston Globe, you know, who said that, you know, Casey Jones didn't like to play young guys. He would have forced Casey Jones to play him. He probably wouldn't have started. He probably would have been the next great sixth man, you know, Havlicek and Frank Ramsey and people like that. Don Nelson
played that role.
What's that?
Walton played the six man role.
Right, Walton. You know, he would have been the next six man for a while, but he would have been the guy who sort of was the link to, you know, the Celtics had won the championship that year. And
well, Shaughnessy just wrote a big book on Larry Bird. I had him on a couple of weeks ago talking about all of that era.
Right. You know, and he would have been the link to keep the dynasty going and playing with those guys. I remember I was covering the U.S. Open golf up out in Long Island. I didn't cover the draft because it was on a Monday. And if there had been a playoff in the U.S. Open that year, I wouldn't have been able to go get into New York. So Alan Goldstein, the great Alan Goldstein.
Love Goldie, by the way. I have a 4-hour sit down with Goldie telling stories that I run from time to time here. So
yeah, so Goldie,
Muhammad Ali. I drove up and saw Ali. Baltimore Bullet stories, man.
but Goldie, I'm sure, was the one who covered that. And I, you know, when it happened, I'd been playing golf that morning. I came back to my wife and I were staying at a B&B. And I go through the main lobby, and they go, "Oh, Mr. Marcus," he said, "your father died. Mr. Bias called about your father," and I said, "I think you got that wrong. I think it's my father called about Mr. Bias." I went back. My wife was watching TV, and she said, "Did you hear what happened?" I said, "I heard something happened." She said, "Len Bias is dead," and I said to her, "I wouldn't be surprised if it was drugs." And because it was the 80s and they were partying and, you know, and I said in the podcast, I said it was one of the few times and as a reporter, I regretted being right. But so I wrote a story. It was hard to come, you know, make arrangements to fly back that day. And everybody was scrambling. They wanted me to go to Boston. I couldn't get to Boston that day. So I wrote a piece about, you know, how the Celtics were not only a perfect team for him to go to from a basketball standpoint, but they were a perfect team for him to go to that he wouldn't have to be in the spotlight like he was at Maryland. And all he had to do is play basketball. He didn't have to deal with the media, which he didn't like doing. I had my last long interview with him came after he had blown me off a couple of times. And Joe Blair, another great legend at Maryland,
Lowercase,
Joseph F. Blair. He came over in the airport in Greensboro and said, the plane was fogged in, and he said, "You got a captive audience." And I went over to Lenny and he saw me coming. He smiled. I said, "Lenny," I said, "you've been a pleasure to cover and a pain, pleasure to watch and a pain in the ass to cover." And he smiled and he laughed. He said, "Yeah, I guess you are honest." And he knew, and it would have been a great situation for him. It would have been, you know, he would have gone to one of, if not the best team in the league, playing with some of the great players of all time, who were sort of, you know, one of the things we talked to Jan Volk, the GM at the time, who replaced Red Auerbach as GM. He said one of the things that Red, who was still the team president, liked about Bias was he played with a bit of a mean streak, and they liked that about him. He said Red liked people who didn't respond to agitation, but sort of were agitators themselves, like Larry Bird.
Well, hang on a sec, because I mean those fights with Larry Bird and the Lakers and the Sixers and that era. But then I think about, you said John Sally, and I'm thinking, man, 88, 89, Bias would have been 3-4 years in. Can you imagine those Celtics teams with Bias getting after the bad boys, right? Like, the game did get rough, where, right, you know, the nasty streak served. I mean, McHale was on the other side of that at that point, right?
Right, right. No, I've written, and I wrote a piece for The Sun in 20th anniversary, and just about how he would have been a rival of Jordan because of who he was playing with and playing for. And, you know, who knows what the NBA history would be right now.
Well, Ewing was there with the Knicks then, and then Reggie Miller came on. I mean, that was and the Sixers were kind of like flaming out at that point, but that was a hell of a time for the NBA at that time. Don Marcus is here. Don, tell everybody about the Bias, but you probably just put Len Bias podcast, it'll pop right up, right?
Well, put in Len Bias, A Mixed Legacy, because there was another podcast this summer.
Mixed Legacy. Okay, so make sure I get the name right.
It was well done, but it was pretty superficial compared to what we've done. And I think that, we had some tremendous, Jay Billis and Van Pelt and Len Elmore, Tom McMillan, and people like that. Clark Kellogg was one of our first guests doing the introductory episode. So I've always been very honest about my work and never thought I was the greatest writer. I thought I did a decent job at The Sun, but I might be more proud of this than anything I've done in my career.
Well, I'll tell you what, I hope everybody gives it a listen. Don Marcus is here live via satellite from Florida. He'll be back in Maryland sometime soon and is in semi-retirement, but still the go-to source when the purge, the turge thing happens and Mark Turgeon leaves the program. Now we'll be following basketball. It's the Bias thing's crazy because I have such a memory of that. I just started at The Sun and I worked the overnight shift 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. putting the evening paper out. And I'll never forget that we had an urgent wire there, and that urgent wire came through, and the only people in the newsroom at 7 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody in the newsroom, me and Larry Harris, and man, that set off I worked 6 years in that newsroom. There were elections. The Challenger went down. Things, big news stories happened during that time. I remember the Pride of Baltimore sunk during that period of time. Nothing like the Bias morning. June 19th, 1986. I don't need to look it up. I know exactly when it was, Don. So 35 years later, the fact that people still want to learn about it, that doesn't shock me, brother.
Right. No, it's, people talk about this. I mean, Jay Billis said, to his generation, it's sort of like the Kennedy assassination. You know exactly where you were and what you were doing when you heard that Len Bias was dead. And that's the truth. I mean, not only his generation, I remember, as I said, where I was, a lot of people, Scott Van Pelt, talked about, he was a lifeguard at a pool. He was still in school and in Olney, Maryland, and seeing a friend's brother. And the brother said, you hear about Bias and he hadn't heard about what happened. And he said, oh, yeah, it's great that he's number two pick in the draft. He goes, no, Len Bias is dead. And Scott was like shocked, obviously, and destroyed.
You had to turn TV on. I'm in the Sun newsroom watching Chris Thomas, who made it down to the PG hospital or whatever the hospital was.
And Memorial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like that whole morning was very, very, and I was 18, I was 17 years old, when that happened. And I just started my job at the paper, and look, the Colts had just left town. There were huge stories, but nothing like that we still talk about all these years later, and the gold jerseys and the growth poster and all of that. Don, I miss you, man. I hope I run into you, outside some Springsteen concert or something good, next year that we can all enjoy, or maybe even a basketball game. Dick Girardi keeps telling me I need to go up to the Palestra and see a game. So I, at some point I'm going to get up to Philly and do that and get my college basketball jerseys
right
together.
I covered my first NCAA tournament game in the Palestra. So,
well, brother, I was with you out at Mackey for that Purdue game,
right,
and that's
right.
One of the great college basketball fun experiences, and I got to have it with you, sitting next to you, and nothing but Boilermakers around me yelling, IU sucks. So God bless the Big Ten. I know you missed the ACC, but I think there's fun to be had at the Big House somewhere along the line. Hey, we'll get you back in soon. Maybe get you out for a crab cake and some storytelling when you're back home, okay?
Take care. Thanks, Nestor.
Len Bias, make sure you go check out that Mixed Legacy podcast. Don Marcus has been my friend for many years, the good professor, joining us here live via satellite from Florida. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour each and every Friday, but we're mixing it up between now and January because of holidays and different things. We're going to be at Costas on the 15th. We hope everybody comes out and joins us. Also, this week, we're at the Beaumont in Catonsville. Don Mueller is going to be a part of that. It is presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.